Hey guys, welcome to the 330 Sports Show. My name is Justin Coffin. Today is Thursday, October 21st, 2021. Today's show is going to be very heavy on the Cleveland Browns. Obviously, I'm in my my orange and brown here. We're going to be talking all things Browns and Denver Broncos. They play in about, 3.5 hours? 4.5 hours from now. So that game is up in Cleveland. Weather, I don't know. It looks a little dicey. Could be windy, could be rainy. And you never know up there on the lake. So we will see what the weather is in store for today. Still a couple unknowns going into that game. We'll talk about that. We'll get into a little bit of the Ohio State Buckeyes Indiana Hoosiers game coming up this weekend. We'll preview that a little bit and talk a few other news and notes from around the sports world. So first thing today, I mentioned it's October 21st, and if you remember, just real quick, paying homage to the movie Back to the Future, today would be Back to the Future Day. That was the date in the time machine when they either started or went forward or went backwards, but October 21st, 1985 is, you know, so we consider that Back to the Future Day on great October Scott. 21st. Yeah, the flux capacitor, all that good stuff. But a great, great movie from back in the 80s. So, and all three of them really are good. So let's start with the Browns and Broncos. So, Joe, before I get into, you know, my spiel about the Browns and the Broncos, your thoughts heading into tonight's game?
I it's like going to be watching a preseason game because now you get to see like all different people doing all different things. And could it go horribly wrong? Sure. But I think you're going to have a bunch of fresh people who have got nothing to lose.
Sure.
And they're going to put up some numbers tonight.
Absolutely. I think tonight is going to be I think it's going to be on the lower scoring end. I'm not going to make a score prediction just because there's so many unknowns. I do think the Browns will win. We'll get into why I think that in a little bit. But am I nervous? Absolutely. You know, like tonight is, you know, I posed that question the other day. Is tonight a must win? I think it's yes. You know, I said to, I think the Browns have to go 10-7 to get in the playoffs. We're sitting at 3-3. So, you know, you got to get at least 7 more wins on this season. I think tonight, if you play kind of that schedule game before the season,
this is one of those wins
yep. that you got to get. And, you know, Baker Mayfield's health is up in the air. OBJ's health is up in the air. Jarvis Landry is hopeful to return tonight. So that's a positive. One of the two tackles looks to be back tonight. We'll get into all that stuff first, but as Browns fans, I want to lead off with this. Why do we hate the Denver Broncos? Let's start with number one, John Elway. Number two, the drive, you know, which again leads to John Elway. Number three, which I labeled number two again, but number three, the fumble. Number four, we have not beaten the Denver Broncos at home since 1989. And ironically, then it was the 7th game of the year and we were 3-3. So sound familiar? Maybe history repeats itself. So it's been a long time coming. And I think tonight is the night we get it done. Number five, they've really dominated us overall in the series. We have, you know, we have a win in recent memory against them, but they have really, really dominated us. And reason number six and number seven, once again, John Elway. So John Elway just crushed our souls for so many years. I was 7-8 years old when John Elway was kind of doing that to the Browns. And, you know, your 7-year-old psyche still remembers that 30 years later. You know what I mean? So
when I see him as a commentator, it seems I hate him even more.
I have this card game at home and I've only played it twice. And we played it in the summer with like a group of friends and the game is called Cleveland Drinks. And it's a sports card game. It's, you know, a deck of cards. You flip it over, but there's rules in it and you have to follow these different rules, kind of like a college drinking game. But one of the rules is, or one of the cards, whenever it could be the first card or it could be the last card. But if you draw that card first, let's say whoever gives out the role or has to do whatever, they always have to say F John Elway.
Yes.
So I might bring that game into studio sometime. Yeah, we'll play that later. We'll play that later in the evening, just in case any kids are watching. but I thought that was apropos for today. So so obviously we know Baker Mayfield is out. Case Keenum is to start. So let's get to know Case Keenum a little bit tonight. So he wears number 5. You're going to see him on the field. Hopefully this is the only game he needs to play. I'm not confident in that, but we will see. But he will be under center for the Browns. He is one of the better backup quarterbacks in the entire NFL. You know, they're paying him $6 million. Hopefully tonight he earns his money. But going way back to his college days at the University of Houston, he is the NCAA all-time leading passing touchdown record setter. So he is an undrafted free agent from the University of Houston, but he has played for the Houston Texans twice, the LA and St. Louis Rams twice, the Minnesota Vikings, the Washington Redskins at the time, and the Denver Broncos, and obviously now the last 2 years with the Cleveland Browns. In the NFL, he has a 62.3 completion percentage. Not terrible, you know, not great, but not terrible. He's thrown for over 14,000 yards in his career. That's pretty solid, especially for a longtime backup. And he's thrown for 75 touchdowns and 47 interceptions. So overall, pretty good numbers, especially from a guy that has been a backup for most of his career. His best season was in 2017. He took the Minnesota Vikings all the way to the NFC title game. So there was a miracle play in the divisional round that beat the New Orleans Saints, kind of like not a Hail Mary, but sort of a Hail Mary type play that beat the Saints. And they got all the way to the NFC title game, which was pretty remarkable. His quarterback coach at the time, Kevin Stefanski. So Kevin Stefanski obviously liked what he saw in Minnesota, brought him in when he became available from Washington. And, you know, so he's been the Browns backup the last two seasons. Your overall confidence level of Case Keenum. Now, we haven't seen him play a whole lot, but what's your thoughts on Keenum?
I was really underwhelmed in the preseason. I thought mm-hmm. that third string guy had more flashes than mm-hmm. he did. I don't think maybe you have your backup as a more consistent, no mix, no interceptions, no mistakes kind of guy. But that's the only thing I'm concerned. He has the ability to throw the ball and he's sure. got a strong arm, but will he, or can he, has enough rapport with the receivers to sure. make this work?
Sure. And obviously not having Kareem Hunt, not having Nick Chubb, you know, you're going to be missing one of your tackles tonight. That, you know, you're playing shorthanded. So,
but that Kelly guy, I'm really looking forward to seeing okay. him. I think he is going to be the outlet guy for Case.
Interesting. Okay. All right. We'll see how much he gets on the field. We'll talk about, I think it's John Kelly. We'll see. We'll talk about him in a little bit here. But yesterday in his press conference, he said, "I'm excited. I'm ready. He's prepared." He said, "You know, I've been taking a good amount of reps in practice," but he said he's just thousands and thousands of reps in his head over and over. You know, he knows the playbook. We joked about the playbook the other day, but I think if you know, besides Baker Mayfield, this is next to obviously your coaches, this is the guy that probably knows the playbook the next best. Right. So I trust in him. He said he's built for this. He's ready to go. So we will see, and hopefully, fingers crossed, he can get the job done.
You know what I noticed about him too? Like when he's on the sidelines and they show him on the television coverage, he's really engaged. I mean, mm-hmm. this dude is like super active.
Yeah.
And I guess when you get to see the game from the sidelines, like you get yourself in those positions of what would I do in that deal.
Right.
So like now he gets to kind of do all of those things and fill mm-hmm. all those gaps that maybe when you're in the mix, Baker doesn't even see
sure.
from that perspective.
And you know, build wise, arm strength wise, him and Baker are very similar quarterbacks. Yep. So hopefully you're not missing too much. It's not too much of a drop down. The only thing, you know, and this would be a good thing if the Browns win and he plays great. I don't think we're expecting him to go out and win us the game. I think we're sort of treating him as a game manager, I would guess, tonight. But what if he goes out and lights it up, throws for 300?
The worst thing that could happen to us.
Do you think so?
Oh, because it would put so much doubt in our current quarterback that would start that whole shitstorm again.
I'm in that camp now. I want him to do well. I want him to, you know, if him and OBJ go out and like OBJ has 10 catches for, you know, 150 yards and two touchdowns and Austin Hooper's involved and, you know,
because Baker's accuracy has been absolutely terrible the last three. If you get somebody who can just do a little bit of reading and a little bit of accuracy, the whole fan base is going to be like, no, we got to go Case Keenum, and I'll just throw my hands up.
Yeah. Baker, the first two games of the year, I think was like at 81% completion. He was the highest in the league. And then it really dropped off after that. He has not looked, you know, the same player. And, you know, he was injured and got hurt. And, you know, this is a torn labrum. Again, it's in his non-throwing shoulder, but anyone who says that doesn't affect you as a quarterback is lying to themselves and because has never had that
injury. The biggest thing is you're going to baby it no matter what. You see someone coming from your left side, right? What are you going to do? You're not going to just stay in there and make that pass. You're going to know you're going to be hurting in a minute, you know?
Exactly. So I think there's much to be seen tonight. It's going to, in one way or another, open up people's eyes. Now, obviously, I'd hope most of us are rooting for Case Keenum. You know, I'm not saying, hey, you know, only go out there and win the game. Don't go out there and, you know, dominate the, you know, the Denver Broncos. But, you know,
so you know what Stefanski should do? He should, at his press conference before the game, say, no matter what happens in this game, Baker's our guy. So he puts that stuff down no matter what happens.
Right, right. Yeah. And I think realistically, you know, you're talking about a guy that probably should be, you know, a good, solid backup quarterback versus a player that was the number one pick in the NFL draft, you know? And Denver is a, you know, they're a middle of the road team. They have, their strength is on the defensive side of the ball. Their weakness is more on the offensive side of the ball. So it will be a challenge for Keenum tonight, you know, without playing, like we said, playing shorthanded and against a decent defense. So, but I like that point. I think it should go without saying Baker Mayfield's your starting quarterback, but unfortunately, you know, the Twitterverse and, you know, all the keyboard warriors out there are going to say, you know, Keenum is the guy. And a lot of times the backup quarterback is the most popular player on the team. You know, it's that way. We've seen that earlier in the year at Ohio State when people were chirping when Stroud was struggling a little bit. And now those people have kind of shut up. So it is what it is. So,
you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to show my loyalty and I'm going to put $100 on the Browns right now.
Oh, okay.
Look at that.
Okay.
That's how much I'm not kidding.
And that line, you're probably going to get a favorable line. I think the Browns start as like 6-point favorites. I think it's down to like 1.5.
Okay.
So you're getting good value there, I think, good. Especially the Browns playing at home. So Joe showing his loyalty live on air. $100 on the Browns. Love it. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about Denver's offense. Denver's defense versus the Browns offense. So first of all, the Browns will be out without Baker Mayfield. That goes without saying. We've said it a bunch of times already. Nick Chubb will be out. Kareem Hunt will be out. The status unknown.
1.5.
Now Joe's locking it in. -110 at 1.5.
Yep.
All right.
That's it.
All right. We'll take it. So Joe to, you know, -$110. We'll see. Let's fingers crossed. Fingers crossed. You are a winner.
Yes.
In you know, in the actual betting and the Browns to actually win the game by what, two or more. So
yep.
Okay. So the Browns are Denver defense versus the Browns offense. We're going to be without a lot of guys. We know that. The offensive side of the ball has really been beat up through the first six games of the season. So Keenum is in. D'Ernest Johnson will be the Browns running back, starting running back. Joe had mentioned John Kelly. He showed some stuff in preseason. He has been on the Browns practice squad. He has been called up to the active roster. He will be the backup running back. It'll be interesting to see how they use Demetric Felton. Maybe they'll use him in the backfield. Maybe they'll, you know, use him as kind of that like swing back guy. So we'll see. Blake Hant's probably going to play a little tackle tonight. James Hudson will play a little tackle. So one of those two guys, if Conklin can't go or Wills can't go, will be in there. And obviously our wide receiver group is still pretty good. If we have Jarvis Landry tonight, that is a huge shot in the arm for the Browns. If, If they don't, you know, they should still be okay. Donovan Peoples-Jones is a solid NFL wide receiver. Rashard Higgins is a solid NFL wide receiver. You have, you know, your rookie from Auburn, Schwartz, that can stretch the field a little bit. I mentioned Felton. You're going to see a lot of three tight end sets, I have a feeling, tonight. So the Browns really, I think, are going to run the ball a lot. They're not going to get away from what they do best, whether it's D'Ernest Johnson, Nick Chubb, or Kareem Hunt, or John Kelly. You know, that right. You do what you do. And if you see in San Francisco, they run the same system. Minnesota, they run the same system. And another team's escaping me. But San Francisco basically plays four running backs. They all do damage. They all get it done. And then Dalvin Cook, who's one of the best running backs in the league, goes out. And his backup, Madison, again, they run the same scheme as the Browns. The two games Cook is out, he runs for over 100 yards. So not expecting D'Ernest Johnson to put up 100 yards, but if you know, I think he's going to do some damage tonight to that Denver defense. So let's talk a little bit more about this. The Browns have allowed 18 sacks this year. That's too many. 18 sacks, and that's part of the reason Baker Mayfield's messed up this year. That 18 sacks allowed is 26th in the NFL. And again, your two anchors of your offensive line have been out a lot this year, and that is a huge, huge difference from a healthy offensive line that they had for the most part last year. Now, listen to the Broncos' pass defense. They rank fourth in the league in total QBR, which is really good. They rank 11th in yards per game, although last weekend, Derek Carr threw for 340 yards and had over 130 rating. So the Broncos are susceptible against the pass and can be damaged by the pass. However, they have some dudes back there. They have some nice players in their secondary, and the Browns are going to have to take the opportunities when they get them.
I got a question for you about some of the offensive play selection here. I think what's been really missing is sort of those like little, you know, 8-yard routes. They're either over the middle to like a Hooper.
Sure.
Right. Or they're, you know, guns 25 yards mm-hmm. down. So that middle part has really been missing. Now, where do you think that's been?
I think Jarvis Landry.
Yeah.
I think he is a huge, he is that guy that, you know, he runs a lot of crossing patterns. He runs a lot of, you know, shorter routes, and the defense keys on him, which opens up the opposite side of the field or extends the defense, stretches them. And a lot of times you'll hear coverage is like a rubber band. You stretch them out a lot to beat them deep. So the more the Browns can stretch them out wide, I think the more they can stretch them out deep. And I'm not expecting with the wins tonight and a backup quarterback and possibly OBJ not playing for the Browns to throw the ball deep a whole lot. But like you said, where is that middle game? Hooper has not been involved the last two or three weeks. Beckham had a decent game last week, but he has not been that deep threat. And I think him and Landry have not played one snap together this season. So I think that's my long answer short. I think Jarvis Landry really makes this offense kind of click. Okay. So I think if we get him back tonight, that is going to be a huge, huge impact.
I wish that OBJ and Higgins could play a little bit more like Landry and he do. Cause mm-hmm. I mean, one of those guys, I mean, they're profile wise, they're real similar in route running. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. DPJ, Higgins, I think, and you're right, Higgins and Jarvis Landry are very similar. They're possession type receivers. They're usually not going to, you know, beat you with a 30, 40 yard pass, but they have that ability. But they're guys that move the chains, they keep the, you know, the clock running. They're extensions of the running game. And, you know, I think they get the job done in the sense, like you said, to get those like over the middle type passes to extend the defense and stretch the defense, give them something else to think about.
Right.
So
Peoples-Jones, I think, is a lot more like OBJ mm-hmm. and his stretch the field speed and whatever.
And to that point too, last week, and you know, I didn't break down the tape or anything like that, but from what the Browns were saying, The Cardinals were playing a 6-2 defense, six defensive linemen, two linebackers, which means you only have three defensive backs deep, which means they gave no respect to our passing game last year, or last week. So if that's the case, you have to pass them. You have to take advantage of that and
get those guys off the line and respect it a little bit.
Exactly.
So what was the fear though? Was it because of the inaccuracy?
Well, I think they were like, you know, Baker, OBJ aren't clicking. No Jarvis Landry. You know, they haven't shown us anything deep. So we're going to play
We didn't, you know, he struggled to find open people.
Exactly. With only two we're going to walk one of those safeties down. We're going to set it up and we're going to stop the run and make them beat us with the pass. And did we beat them with the pass? No.
Yeah. So do you think some of those coverages that we've been really sloppy with those, you know, 5 and 10 yard buffers between them, smoked like we are, do you think it's possible that, you know, they get, you know, a safety in there, a different safety in there that cleans that up? Or do you think it's just mechanics?
You're talking about the Browns?
Yeah. Cause those coverages have been terrible.
Yeah. The Browns and we'll get to that in just a minute, but the Browns have been one of the worst third down defenses in the entire league. And again, I don't know if that's scheme. I don't know if that's guys out of position. They've blown several coverages this year. The Chargers beat them deep twice. Arizona beat them last week with one. And there's been several others this year that have just been, you know, it's like, yeah. Oh, the first week of the year, Tyreek Hill had a 75 yard touchdown after the game we thought was put away. So it's something. It's like, is it Joe Woods' fault, the defensive coordinator, or is it the player's fault? I tend to lean the player's fault, that there are a lot of new guys in there that haven't played together a whole lot. They haven't played a preseason, and most of those guys sat out the entire preseason. And it's a matter of timing, getting in sync, injuries, a lot of that stuff. So I think, you know, if you look at Grant Delpit, he's basically a rookie. He didn't play last year. JOK has been very good, and he's obviously out. Denzel Ward did not play a snap in the preseason. And John Johnson's brand new. Troy Hill's brand new. So a lot of those guys in the secondary have not been cohesive. They have not been cohesive. And yeah, they have to get that cleaned up big time.
Yeah. And sometimes I, you know, when something is just properly defended against, I don't feel quite as bad, but when it looks like it's blown, I don't know if it's, they're running some kind of sophisticated play that kind of capitalizes on sort of like the inexperience and confuses, you know, defensive backs or what.
There was one touchdown last week. And I can't remember exactly which play. I think it was to DeAndre Hopkins. It was like, you know, the third or fourth down. It was his first touchdown, I believe. And Ronnie Harrison was the one that blew the coverage because, you know, there was a crossing route. He got beat because he went for that crossing route instead of staying disciplined. And that's where the touchdown ended up happening, in his zone where he should have been. So mistakes will happen,
right?
But you have to limit those. And on third down, we talked about it on Tuesday's show, that's your money down. And fourth down especially, those are your money downs. You have to get those teams off the field. Yeah. So I guess, again, long answer short to that. So let's talk real quick about Denver's offense versus the Browns' defense, and that's a good lead into this. So Denver is led by quarterback Teddy Bridgewater. They have running backs Melvin Gordon and rookie Javonte Williams. Their leading receivers are Cortland Sutton, Tim Patrick, and Noah Fant, who is a really good tight end. One of their best receivers, Jerry Jeudy, is out for them still. So he is a deep play threat. So he is out. That's a good thing for the Browns. The Browns defense, though, is primarily, they might be banged up, but most of the important players are going to be playing tonight. JOK will be out. He's going to be out for at least 3 weeks, probably 4 or 5 weeks. But when we get him back, that'll be a big asset. But the next guy's got to step up, whether that's Mac Wilson, whether that is whoever it might be, whether they play three safeties and, you know, three corners, whatever it might be, whoever the next guy is has to step up. Teddy Bridgewater on the season, 10 touchdowns, 4 picks. 101 rating as a quarterback, but last week against the Raiders threw for 334 yards. That sounds good, but did have and 3 touchdowns, but he also had 3 interceptions last week and an 85 rating, which is way lower than his rating on the season. The Browns defense this year, and keep this in mind, the Browns have played Patrick Mahomes. They've played Kirk Cousins. They have played Justin Herbert and Kyler Murray, who's the rookie of the year or MVP, excuse me, going into the league. At this point of the season. So 4 out of the 6 quarterbacks you have played are 4 of the best in the league up to this point. So the Browns defense is allowing a 102.5 rating, which is 25th in the league, and they are 15th in yards per attempt. So they got to clean that up, and they're going to improve. If we remember at this point last season, the Browns offense was really sluggish. They did not do a whole lot in the beginning of the season. This year, the Browns offenses look great. You know, outside of the second half of the Cardinals game last week, the Browns offense has really, really looked good. But it's kind of like the bye week was nice and early last year. This week, it's towards the end of the season. So they don't have time to clean it up on the bye week. They got to do this on the fly. And the only benefit, the silver lining with a Thursday game is if you can sneak out a win tonight, get a win, you can rest some players up, you can get some more schemes in, you can get guys a little bit more rest and a little bit more comfortable on whatever side of the ball they're playing. And I think that will be beneficial to the Browns, just that rest going into the Steelers game, which is on Halloween. Denver offense. This is a good sign for the Browns. The Denver offense on third down is last in the league. So that is a really, really good sign for the Browns because they have played some of the best teams in the league up to this point. They are also 28th in the red zone. So these are two things the Browns need to capitalize on and get after, you know, get after that offense, get after Teddy Bridgewater. The Broncos also have allowed 2 or more sacks in all 6 of their games this season. And the Browns defense has 18 sacks on the year, which is 3rd in the league. And they also get after the quarterback on dropbacks, the 2nd best in the league. The Denver rushing attack, again, is led by Melvin Gordon and Javonte Williams. They average about 117 yards on the ground per game, which is 4.6 yards per carry. The Browns defense only allows 3.6 yards per carry, which is 3rd in the league, and only is giving up 87 yards per game, which is 6th in the league. So the Browns have a pretty stout run defense, but they got to pick it up on the back end. And I think tonight is the game where you're saying, you know what? The offense is banged up. Defense, you know, the offense has carried the defense a lot this year. Even in the losses, they have really carried them. This is the game the Browns offense, you know, hopefully can get stuff done and move the ball and score a lot of points. But this is the game where you got to go to Joe Woods and that defense and get those guys in a room and say, listen, win this one for us. The defense needs to control that ball. They, you know, stop the running game, limit the big plays, turn them over. And if they can do that, we win this game. So I am putting a lot of the pressure tonight on the Browns defense. And I think Myles Garrett, Jadeveon Clowney, the Malik guys in the middle, your secondary, and hopefully your linebacking core all steps up and plays big because we need it.
win by it. At least the safety.
Yes. And win. Yeah. Yeah. How ironic with the tie game, dropping back. Teddy Bridgewater has won. And he gets sacked for your 2-point cover. That would be awesome. So
you called it, you heard it here.
I'm expecting I'm not going to give a score prediction, but I am going to say, I think the Browns win and I think it's a low scoring game. That's all I'll say. All right, real quick, looking at our pick'em, which again, we get to each week. So the Denver and the Cleveland, Denver at Cleveland, as I mentioned, this game was a 6-point line when it opened up. And then I send these spreads out to these guys on Tuesday morning or Tuesday afternoon. And by that time, the line had dropped to 3.5. Now it has dropped 2 more points. So a lot of money going towards Denver. A lot of bettors. Vegas is still on the Browns, but a lot of the bettors have gone, you know, the money has gone towards the Broncos. So we are split evenly on that game. 5 of us have the Browns. 5 of us have the Broncos. Looking at the next game, the Bengals at the Ravens. The Ravens are a 6.5-point favorite. again, five of us on the Ravens, five of us on the Bengals. That should be a great, great AFC North game. I think the Bengals are an up-and-coming team. However, I think the Ravens do not want to let go of that grasp of the lead of the AFC North. So, you know, I personally like the Ravens in that game. Joe, you're on the Bengals, so we'll see how that unfolds. The Chiefs and the Titans, most of us like the Chiefs laying 4.5 on the road at Tennessee. Tennessee coming off a big win at Buffalo on Monday night. We got Washington at the Packers. This is one of the biggest spreads of the week. We have two of us on Washington, Jenny and Ellie, like the football team. And eight of us are on the Packers laying the 9.5. And we also have the Colts at the 49ers. 49ers are 4.5-point favorites. And we have three of us on the Colts. We have Luke, we have Jenny, and we have Ellie. So Jenny and Ellie going with the underdogs this week, looks like. So we'll let you know how those picks turn out. Right now, Ben Figley has a pretty sizable lead in our pick'em. So
I'm going to have to start doing crazy stuff so I could maybe break ahead. So I'm going to play this one like, yeah, I'm either going to be in dead last or first. It's not going to be this middle ground. This 50-50 split stuff ain't working
for me. I'm going to just say this on record. Next year, I think at the beginning of the season, just bet strictly underdogs. Because underdogs, the first month of the season, I don't have the number in front of me, but I believe the underdogs, the first couple weeks of the season were like 70-75% covering in those first couple weeks. So if they're getting the points, take them early. And I think you take all of those games early on and you'll eventually win some money.
Vegas is kind to underdogs.
And of course, next year when we say that, it'll be flipped the other way. 30-70.
They'll get a new numbers runner and it'll be the opposite.
He'll bring in the cooler. So all right, let's switch. let's switch to the Buckeyes real quick. Just a real quick preview of Ohio State and the Indiana Hoosiers. I'm just going to give you my prediction right off the bat. I think Ohio State wins this game 42-17 at Indiana. I think looking at this game before the season, this was one of those games where you thought this game might be tough going on the road to Bloomington. Indiana was a really good team last year. Ohio State was the only team Indiana lost to in the regular season last year. But I put at the top Hoosier Daddy because the Indiana Hoosiers, Ohio State leads the all-time series 77-12-5. Indiana's last victory came in 1988 over Ohio State. Last season, the Hoosiers, again, their only loss was the Buckeyes. It was a 42-35 game. However, Ohio State led 28-7 at halftime. Ohio State, real quick update. They are 5-1, 3-0 in the Big Ten. Indiana is 2-4, 0-3 in the Big Ten. But listen to this. Indiana, as I mentioned, four losses. All four of those losses have come to top 10 teams in the country, which is pretty remarkable. They lost to Iowa, they lost to Cincinnati, they lost to Penn State, and they lost to Michigan State. So whether those teams remain in the top 10 at the end of the season will be probably won't happen, but that's a pretty incredible stat to have your four losses in your first six games all to top 10 teams. This game is a 21-point spread in favor of the Buckeyes with an over-under at 60.5. I like the Buckeyes to cover, and based on my point total, I have the point total at 59, so I guess I'm going to go with the under on that. So here's why the Buckeyes will win. They have a great offense, and when I say great offense, I'm talking the most elite offense in the entire country. They lead the nation in total offense. C.J. Stroud looks settled in. Travion Henderson might be the best running back in the country. Texas has a solid running back, Bijan Robinson, but I think Travion Henderson is potentially the best back in all of America. And he's only a true freshman, so you get two more years of him after this year. And they also have the best trio of wide receivers in the country with Olave, with Wilson, with Smith and Jigba, and you got a bunch of guys backing them up too that are just phenomenal. The defense has really improved. They look much, much better since the first couple weeks of the season. They've changed things up a little bit. I think they finally found out who they can trust on the field, who they like. And Indiana is also going to be playing this game without their starting quarterback. He has struggled this year, but an interesting note on Indiana's quarterback who will be playing. This is pretty cool. So Chris Olave, who may be Ohio State's best receiver of all time, was not even a blip on Ohio State's radar until, I believe Indiana's quarterback's name is Jack Tuttle. Ohio State went out to look at this kid in San Diego, or, you know, the outskirts of San Diego where he was a quarterback. This is a really cool story. And then I believe it was Ryan Day or Brian Hartline or one of the offensive coaches that said, "Who's that kid?" And it was the kid he was throwing the ball to. And it was Chris Olave. And he got on their radar. They recruited him. The rest is history. And I always think it's cool, like stories like that, like Chris Olave, not even on Ohio State's radar. They go out and recruit this quarterback who doesn't even end up at Ohio State, and they get instead maybe the best wide receiver Ohio State's ever had. Cool. So cool story there. Just a couple players to watch out for on Indiana. Ty Freifogel. That's a tongue twister. Wide receiver. He is one of the best wide receivers in the country. He struggled a little bit this year with an inconsistent offense, but he will be a high NFL draft pick next year. And they do have some dudes on the defensive side of the ball. Two guys to look out for: Micah McFadden, a linebacker, and Taiwan Mullen, a cornerback. Both of those guys will be NFL players in the near future. So again, I like Ohio State to win and cover 42-17. And based on that point total, that is 59. The over under is 60.5. So I'm going to go with the under on that, but don't hold me to your mortgage payment. So
can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Have you noticed any of the college athletes getting any of those likeness contracts or any of their name and whatever? You've seen any of them capitalizing on it this year?
Oh yeah.
All right. I haven't seen many of them. So who's the big name so far?
So, well, Ohio State's backup quarterback. The backup to the backup to the backup. Their fourth string quarterback.
Really?
Who was supposed to be a senior in high school this year, but supposed to be the number one player in the country next year. The highest rated quarterback Ohio State has ever recruited. Again, fourth string quarterback. Probably won't even see the field this year. Signed a $1.4 million contract with some trading card company. He also advertises for like a sports energy type drink called Kombucha. It's out of somewhere in Texas. I know the Notre Dame offensive line is sponsored by Mission Barbecue. So, you know, the big eaters, you gotta get your pulled pork and your, nice, your brisket and all that stuff in. Some other ones. I've heard a lot of stuff with car dealerships, a lot of guys getting cars, and
no commercial is worse than the Cleveland Browns.
No,
I know I'm talking about, right?
Yes. And I don't want to throw a company under the bus that might be, but it's is it Spitzer?
Yeah, it is.
It's Spitzer. Okay. Hey, Spitzer, if you want to sponsor us, we'll gladly play it. You. However, it's pretty bad. Joe has a great setup in the back here that we can make that look way more professional. So Spitzer, we will,
it doesn't even rhyme. They tried to rhyme.
It's
Conklin.
Conklin,
right?
And it's Wyatt Teller.
Yes, right.
So yeah, those guys aren't paid to be actors. However, I mean, they're probably getting some money from Spitzer, maybe a car, something like that. But yeah, Spitzer, again, we'll be happy to have you as a sponsor on the show. But next time, let some of our people down here film it. We'll make it look professional. We'll make it look
great. Write a script out a little better than that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'll stop there. Because, you know, Spitzer, their world revolves around you. Their commercials.
Well done.
Their commercials.
Look at
though,
you go. You know,
so that's a free plug, by the way. I think there's
now they're
one,
friends with us.
I think there's one right out of Lordstown, maybe. Is that where they're at?
That's close enough.
Yeah.
And speaking of car dealerships, what's the story on Josh Gordon making his way back into NFL?
I know the Kansas City Chiefs have activated him to their active roster, I believe, last week. But, you know, I'm not sure.
Okay.
And, you know, and people are like, you know, they think Josh Gordon and they're think, oh yeah, Josh Gordon. It's like, yeah, he was awesome like 8 years ago. You know, right. Like 2014 is a long time ago, you know.
And 900 pounds of marijuana later.
Well, marijuana can be very relaxing from what I've heard. I've never tried it, but you know, from what I don't know, maybe in Missouri it's recreational. I don't know.
Maybe.
So who knows? But our friend Josh Gordon, I think will, I mean, that guy is just a freak. Like, I mean, he's a freak athlete, but you know, you're out of the game for so long, it's going to catch up to you, you know? So that's just my thoughts. Will he make a few receptions this year? Probably. Will he get in the end zone? Probably. But is he going to do anything to make that offense great, over the top, better than they already are? Probably not. So
if Belichick couldn't round him and make him into a player, nobody
can. That's an excellent point. That's an excellent point. Real quick, I just want to give you a few quick notes on week 8 of the college football season. Last night in Boone, North Carolina, Appalachian State took out Coastal Carolina. Ooh. So Coastal Carolina goes down 30-27. Tomorrow, or actually tonight, there's another ranked team. Tulane is at SMU. That game, again, is tonight, but no one that's watching this show is going to watch that game. But SMU, ranked number 21. Notable games from the weekend. We had USC at Notre Dame. Notre Dame, a 7-point favorite. I already mentioned Ohio State. Wake Forest, who is leading the ACC, is going to be at Army. They're a 3-point favorite. Wisconsin, who is not ranked, but they are a 3-point favorite at Purdue, who is now ranked in the top 25. Oklahoma State, listen to this one. This is the crazy line of the weekend for me. Oklahoma State is ranked number 8 in the country. They are playing at Iowa State, who has 2 losses. They're unranked, but the Cyclones are 7-point favorites in this game. So that is very, very interesting to me. And that's kind of like a, what does Vegas know about that game? I think Oklahoma State wins that game, but what does Vegas know about that game? I think that line's a little fishy right there. Another fishy line to me, number 10 Oregon, who, you know, Buckeye fans will know very well this year, is playing at the Rose Bowl at USC this weekend. UCLA, who is unranked, is a 2-point favorite in that game. Very, very interesting. And then this line really jumped out at me. If you would have asked me this a year ago and said, when will the next time Pitt be favored against the Clemson Tigers? I would have said, I don't know, like never, you know, but Pat Narduzzi, who, by the way, another head coach from right here in Youngstown, Ohio, is really turned around the Pitt Panthers. They are, I think they're a 5-1 football team. They look pretty good offensively. And on the defensive side of the ball, that's kind of his strength, but their offense has been pretty good. But Clemson, who we all know has struggled this year, they have 2 losses, but they've had a couple other wins that have could have gone either way. Pitt is a 3-point favorite. So that game at Pittsburgh this weekend, Clemson at Pitt, the Panthers are a 3-point favorite. And just some other notable local teams on the schedule. Youngstown State travels to Indiana as well. They're playing Indiana State at 1 p.m. That game will be on ESPN+. Mount Union will be taking on Heidelberg. I think Heidelberg is in Tiffin, Ohio, if I'm not mistaken. But so another, you know, 2 Ohio teams. Mount Union, obviously a very loaded Division III football team year in, year out. Buffalo travels to Akron, and Kent is going to Athens to take on the Ohio Bobcats. So that is a look at some of the college games this weekend. Steve Leslie is going to join us via Zoom next weekend, but he sent me his list of, you know, the updated thoughts and his thinking for this weekend. Now, we have 4 remaining undefeated teams in high school football. These have been the same 4 undefeated teams for 4 or 5 weeks now. We have the South Range Raiders. We have the Hubbard Eagles. We have the Garrettsville Garfield G-Men. And some people might consider them local to our area. Some might not, but I'm going to consider them a local team. And we also have the West Branch Warriors. So those four teams are undefeated. South Range and Hubbard will play each other this weekend. So 2-9-0 teams going against each other in the final regular season week of high school football. That's kind of a cool, I can't think of another time that's happened. I'm sure it has happened, but I can't think of another time, at least locally, that's happened recently. Top week nine performances of last weekend. So we have David Altier of Western Reserve, 338 rushing yards.
How does six that happen? Touchdowns.
Sounds like Al Bundy numbers again right there. A lot of crazy stats this year. Stephen Mara of West Branch High School. Again, West Branch is undefeated. Set a school record with 23 touchdowns in a season, which is a school record.
Did you ever see those YouTube videos where you have those freakishly big high school players and they bowl people over?
Oh, it's usually it's usually the offensive lineman. But you give one of those guys a running back, boom, just get out of the way.
Give it to him every time.
Or if you get like Bo Jackson, you just get these, guys that are superior athletes on a high school field, and it just looks like a men playing among boys. The next one, this is a kicker. We have our first kicker on the list. Austintown Fitch's kicker, Josiah Burney, hit a game-winning 27-yard field goal over the Boardman Spartans last week. So that's obviously Fitch and Boardman, that's a good rivalry. But congratulations to him hitting a 27-yard field goal, I believe, as time expired. So pretty cool there for him. TC Caffey of Hubbard. This guy is on our list almost every week. I know YSU has an offer out for him. I saw Army has offered him. He's probably got more offers that I know of, but he's got at least a couple Division I offers and probably a lot more coming. But he had 236 rushing yards last week, three touchdowns. He has over 2,000 rushing yards on the season. Keep in mind, that's through nine games.
Wow.
And a lot of these games, he's probably not even playing most of the game because, they've been beating up on people. They're a 9-0 team. Bo Brungard of Springfield, I believe he is a Youngstown State commit right now, but he is the quarterback at Springfield. He had five total touchdowns last week. Brady Shannon of Ursuline, he's made our list several times this year. He becomes the school's all-time passing record holder, which is a great accomplishment. And Jackson Johnson, I think he is the coach's son there at Salem, but he had five total touchdowns last week, including 138 rushing yards on the season. So pretty cool numbers for those guys. Some video game numbers on there. So
yeah,
pretty awesome. Like, I was more of a defensive guy, but some of these numbers, just looking at them, it's like, who is David Altier, 338 rushing yards. Like, it's hard to do that in a video game, let alone in an actual high school game.
I got a question for you.
Yeah.
Video games. Like when you played Madden, who was your team and what was your quarterback, running back, or quarterback receiver? So
I mean, I was always the homer. I always loved to play with the Browns, but I'll take the Browns out of this. I'm going to go all the way back to, Tecmo Bowl. I'm going to start there.
All right.
In Tecmo Bowl, I would always use, at the time, I think it was the Oakland Raiders. I don't know. They went to LA, to Oakland, to LA, to now in Vegas. But it was Bo Jackson.
Yeah.
Bo Jackson was the awesome. Go-to, right? So I always loved them. And I was my second favorite team growing up was always the 49ers. So I would use them a lot. Joe Montana or Steve Young, I think, at the time.
Right.
And Jerry Rice, and you had Ricky Waters, or, they'd plug in a bunch of different running backs, but they'd always be so good. John Taylor, the Cowboys in the early 90s were a fun one to watch and play. But let's see, on Madden, and I didn't play a ton of video games, but when I did, I'll start with college. In college, my dad and I, Scott, would always, we would pick a random team from the MAC. So I would always pick Bowling Green. I don't know why. I'd always pick Bowling Green. And at the time, they had a rushing quarterback named Josh Jacobs. And I just loved, because, in those video games, those dual threat quarterbacks are the best, because you could run, you could pass, you can do whatever. And then in Madden, I remember, again, excluding the Browns, I remember using the Minnesota Vikings a lot when they had Dante Culpepper and Randy Moss. And who else? I'll just go with them because I specifically remember using those two. How about you? Do you have any?
Yeah, Brunell and Fred Taylor. They were my go-tos.
Okay, Jacksonville.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
I can't remember who the receiver was. He was pretty good too.
Oh, remember. Was it Jimmy Smith?
There you go.
Jimmy Smith. Yeah.
Good call.
Okay. All right. Yeah. That's a solid one to pick. I think, and correct, somebody out there can correct me if I'm wrong, but in Jacksonville's second or third year, they made it to the AFC Championship game, which is incredible.
Yep.
All right. One more high school football note before we wrap up with just a couple other news and notes. Here are the biggest games this weekend, according to Steve Leslie. And you can watch all these games with our friends over at YSN. We have 9-0 Hubbard and 9-0 South Range, arguably the game of the year. We have Austintown Fitch and Warren Harding battling. In Warren, we have Canfield at Boardman. Canfield has been very, very good this year. Boardman fighting for a playoff spot. There are 16 teams to get in the playoffs. I think Boardman is right there on the edge, on the cusp. And, you know, they started the year off hot. They've struggled a little bit lately, but hopefully they can get in the playoffs. West Branch, 9-0, another 9-0 team at Salem. Salem's had a great year, 7-2. Garrettsville Garfield 9-0 taking on the Liberty Leopards at 5-4. And then, you know, I'm going to use the old cliche here, throw out the records. But you got the Holy War. You got Ursuline 5-3 and you got Cardinal Mooney 1-8. They've struggled this year, but, you know, that is always a game that means so much to this community, no matter what. So those are our, look at high school games this weekend. Starting tomorrow night. And I want to close just with a few news and notes that we might not have got to on Tuesday. So real quick, Ohio State men's basketball is going to open up the season as preseason number 17 in the country. I'll make sure I get in touch with Terrence Stiles. He is still down there as a coach with the Ohio State Buckeyes. And he's just a good dude. So we've had him on the show back in March, I believe. And we'll get him on the show for some of his thoughts on the Buckeyes this year and what he's up to down in Columbus. Checking in with the Major League Baseball playoffs. We are down. We're getting down to the nitty gritty here. I know we haven't spent a whole lot of time on this. We'll check in because by our next show, we're going to know who the World Series teams are. But right now, Houston leads Boston. The Astros are up on the Red Sox 3-2. The Astros have won the last two games. Game 6 is Friday night, and Game 7, if necessary, will be Saturday night. So both those games, check those out this weekend if they play, especially to a Game 7. That's the best kind of game in sports is baseball game 7, in my opinion. The NLCS is the Braves and the Dodgers. Right now, the Braves have a 3-1 lead, and the Dodgers were lucky to get that one win. This is the exact same situation, though, the Braves were in last year. The Braves were up 3-1 on the Dodgers. The Dodgers came back and won it. So the Dodgers should have confidence knowing they've been here before, they've done that, but the Braves also should have that confidence of, hey, we're up 3-1. Let's just go out and get the win and let's get to the World Series. So game 5 of that series is tonight. The Braves looking to punch their ticket to the World Series. That game is on at 8:00 tonight. But again, you know, maybe flip over from the Browns game, check it out. And whoever you're rooting for, whether the Dodgers or the Braves, that game is tonight. Game 6 will be Saturday and game 7, if necessary, will be Sunday night.
I got a question for you. Yeah. I was going to ask you this in the Browns segment, but I totally forgot. There's been a lot of talk about Jamie Gillen and parting ways, his deal. Yeah. What's he done that's so wrong at this point? I must have missed something.
Well, you know, Jamie Gillen's one of those guys you hope to not have to talk about a whole lot because, you know, hopefully the offense is on the field. Hopefully the offense can get the job done. And he's only punting a couple times a game. So the play that stands out to everyone is the Kansas City game where he dropped the ball. That was a huge mistake. Can't happen, but you move on. Where I think a lot of people are on him is after that Chargers game. So in the Chargers game, he, you know, basically had like a 30-yard punt that put him right into, they were basically already in scoring position. They were on the Brown side of the field and, then I think people started to dig into the numbers. He is actually, I think, second or third lowest in net punting yards. So, you know, his stats are not great. They weren't great last year, but again, he's one of those guys you hopefully don't have to worry about a whole lot because you're up in the game or you're only punting inside the 20 or stuff like that. But yeah, so I think he really needs to step up, get those yards up. And, you know, again, it's one of those positions that hopefully you don't have to talk about a whole lot, because if they just do their job, you're not worried about them being a great punter or a terrible punter. They're just, you know, we're just hoping, I think, just be somewhere in the middle, do your job, catch the punt or catch the snap and punt the ball, you know? So, I think that's where we're at on Jamie Gillen. All right, so
thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. One more thing, Joe, let me ask you this. Let's go back to the Back to the Future thing.
All right.
So, I mentioned today was Back to the Future Day. If you could time travel, and I know you're a big Nikola Tesla, you're a big Thomas Edison, you know, all those guys, I don't want to go down conspiracy theory holes, but there was rumors, you know, and Albert Einstein said time travel is a possibility. Totally. It's theoretical, it's possible, but it could be done. If you could time travel, let me start with this. If you could time travel in the future or in the past, where would you go?
All right. So in the past, I would go at the brink of the Industrial Revolution and I would freaking dominate. I just know all the technologies and everything that works.
So when we're time traveling too, are we going in with the knowledge we have in the present day?
I hope so. Okay. That's the only advantage.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, yeah. So, I mean, you could go back to when the stock market, you know, when Google was the first, you know, publicly
totally
traded,
biff it, right?
And yeah, and just short the stock or whatever. So you're going in the past.
Yes.
Okay. And you're going to the Industrial Revolution. Okay. To kind of just jump on what you know the trends are going to be.
Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah. And know the fights that are going to happen and who ends up winning and what the consumers will support.
Okay.
And I don't know, I might end the whole universe if I did that, because then it would be not Thomas Edison. It would be Joe Daniel, right? Who invented the light bulb? Joe. Yeah. Well, who invented the telephone? Joe again.
This almost sounds like the plot to Back to the Future 2, right? When he goes in the future and Biff gets the sports betting book and, you know, like ends up getting the casino, but the Hill Valley, the whole, you know, town goes to shit because of that. So, okay, let me ask this. Sure. If you could go in the future, when would you go?
I would try to time it so when travel to like other planets would be so far enough in the future, I know there'd be flying cars and there'd be interplanetary travel.
Okay.
Say we're about 100 years from that.
Okay. So not in our lifetime.
No.
But, okay, but I guess if we have a time machine, there is no constructs on life. So, okay. All right. Very interesting. I was just curious about that. Because
what about you? You got to answer the question, too.
Well, sometimes when you ask the question, you don't have the answer yourself. So you just want to know someone else's answer.
All right.
But
fair enough.
I think it would be cool to go back in like certain moments in history and not try to change them, but just be a bystander and try to just see what happens. But it would also be cool to flash forward. Like, I would want to flash forward, I think, in the future far enough where I wouldn't know anyone that was currently living. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. And kind of just see where the world is, you know, like you said, are we time traveling? Are we like, how is the world different than we know it now? So I think those would be my two answers, maybe back, but it's hard not to see Back to the Future 2 and go back and play some bets on some sporting events
some
that
sporting
you already
events that
know.
You could totally lay money
and
down,
not
right?
Just sporting events. I mean, maybe you could, I mean, what if you went to Ford Theater the night Lincoln would get shot and be like, hey, maybe you don't want to see this tonight, you know, or just something.
Yeah, you're
going to
end
like
the universe
that.
Too.
Yeah, and that would end the universe probably. Yeah. So,
but you're what we call a time tourist when you just go back and look at things.
I would probably be a tourist. I think so too. So we could go down that rabbit hole on another show, but I just wanted to get some quick answers with that. All right. So Browns tonight, 8:00, you know, huge game. Buckeyes on Sunday, or I'm sorry, on Saturday. So go Browns, go Buckeyes. Everybody enjoy your weekend, and we will see you next.
Thank you for listening to this show on Youngstown Studio. If you like our programming, we invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow our Facebook page, or subscribe to your favorite podcast platform like iTunes or Spotify. This is original Youngstown content, and we would appreciate you sharing the videos and the word about us. Thank you.